Some of the Chicago-based trustees have faced harrowing obstacles to get here this morning, so apologies for starting the meeting a little bit late. Ms. Doyle, would you call the roll, please?
Trustee Rita Athes. Trustee Dennis Barsima.
Here.
Vice Chair John Butler.
Here.
Trustee Veronica Herrero.
Here.
Trustee Aidan O'Brien.
Here.
Trustee Leland Strom. Trustee Eric Watswitz.
Here.
Board Chair Montel Gales.
Mr. Perry, would you please confirm that appropriate notice of this meeting has been provided and that we have a quorum present?
Morning, Trustee Butler. You have a quorum present. An appropriate notice has been provided pursuant to the Illinois Open Meetings Act.
Thank you. May I have a motion to approve the agenda as proposed?
So move, Wazowitz.
Second, Herrero.
There's a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, the motion is approved. The agenda is approved. May I have a motion to amend that motion in order to approve a consent agenda as follows: action items 8A1 through 8A4.
So moved, O'Brien.
I'll second it.
Okay. We've reached consensus or an agreement. The motion by Trustee O'Brien and second by Trustee Herrera. Is there any discussion? Is there all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, the motion's approved. May I have a motion to approve the minutes of the special meeting of the Board of Trustees on February 20th, 2025?
So moved, Barsima.
Second, Wazowitz.
There's a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing no opposition, the minutes are approved. May I have a motion to approve the minutes of the special meeting of the Board of Trustees on February 27th, 2025?
So moved, O'Brien.
Second, Herrero.
There is another team of O'Brien and Herrero. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? Seeing none, the motion is approved. I want to welcome, on behalf of Chair Gales, the University Advisory Committee representatives present today, the current UAC representatives are Felicia Bohannon, Benjamin Creed, Brad Kripe, Larissa Garcia, Natasha Johnson, and Thomas Skuzinski. Do any of you have any comments this morning?
Just brief comments. One is a thank you and an encouragement to continue the good work of President Freeman and her senior leadership team, helping the institution navigate through these times of uncertainty as things change at the federal level. And the second one is a thank you to the Board of Trustees for continued support of the sabbaticals offered to campus as an important investment in our faculty and staff for their creative work and the creative endeavors they participate in. So thank you.
Thank you for those comments. I appreciate them. We appreciate them. I'll reserve any comments on behalf of the chair for when the chair arrives. So we'll move to public comment. We recognize members of the public who have complied with state law and Board of Trustees bylaws by registering their written request to address the board with our parliamentarian. Mr. Perry, have you received any timely request to address the meeting?
Trustee Butler, we had three public comments this morning. So I'll start with the first name that was received, and that is Martha Villagomez.
Thank you, and I'll remind the presenters that we have a 5-minute time period for comments. Thank you.
Good morning, all. My name is Martha Villagomez. I am a senior library specialist with the libraries. I have been a civil service staff member since May of 2023. Before that, I was a student worker at the libraries when I transferred over here to finish my undergraduate degree as an English major. I knew I wanted to be an NIU staff member from the very beginning, and When I first started, my supervisor at the time, who was very eagerly looking forward to two more years to retire, let me know that this university was the second lowest paid of all state universities. And I said, oh, okay, well, you know, that's out of what, four? And she said, no, out of the country. And I'm someone who, I'm first-generation student. My parents were factory workers, and for them, they were very proud of me to even be continuing my education, to be working at a university, period. And even now, to them, it's, you know, back in the day, it was like a prestigious thing to say that you work at a university. Regardless of the pay, it was more of a title to say, I work at a university. I didn't realize that as a student worker, I was making about the same as many of the people supervising me, many of the people that had been long-term employees there, and that they hadn't received raises in many years. As somebody who was a retail employee for many, many years, I was accustomed to, you know, very minute but yearly raises, cost of living raises, merit raises. I'm currently making less now, even with our upgrade in pay with the last contract, than I was as a full-time employee at the Barnes & Noble, which some of you remember closed in 2016. It's been a while since 2016. So to be saying that I'm making less now than I did then is a little bit embarrassing to me to say to others. I'm very proud to be working at NIU. I'm very proud to be a student here still and looking forward to getting my post-bac in sociology and then hopefully my master's. I am still very proud. I joined this union as soon as I became a staff member because for my parents, being in a union was always something they stressed as important. To find out that our union is has very low dues-paying members and that it's not really and I can understand the appearance of, well, maybe they're just not interested. Talking to my coworkers, it's less of a, we're not interested, it's a, we can't afford it. We have a snack pantry in the library that's open to all, not just students, that many coworkers need to participate in because we make too much to get government benefits, but too little to survive any other way. Many go to the food pantries that library staff, churches supply. To be seen by other student workers and other students participating in the same things is embarrassing, not just as an individual, but to the university as a whole. The optics are sad. And I know that the university talks about how do we boost morale. Not being embarrassed of where you work is a major way in how to boost morale. We want to be proud of where we work, not just in the job we do, but outside of the job as well. Thank you.
Do we have other public comment?
We do. We have two more. Next, Leslie Hsu.
Hi, my name is Leslie Hsu. I am an office administrator at NIU, and I have worked for NIU for over 21 years. I've been in higher ed for 30 years. I just have a few things to say. It won't take long. But I want to thank you for letting us speak today. I'd like to talk about some of the disparities on campus. There's talk about a sense of belonging. That is becoming more difficult to achieve when we have less staff doing the jobs that have so much effect on the students. When the front line has less staff to do our jobs, the students notice that they are receiving less assistance with non-academic issues, which there are many of. Because the staff are not being replaced when positions are vacated, it puts a second full-time job on another full-time person. This is a terrible way to handle any kind of customer service, and that is what our jobs are all about. Another issue is very concerning is the pay gap between the upper echelon and the average staff member. To start with, President Freeman began her tenure as president. Since President Freeman began her tenure as president, the number of vice presidents has gone from 11 to 33, and the deficit has gone from $15 million to $35 million. During this time, the president's salary has gone up significantly, and she seems to have gotten a performance bonus of around $20,000 each year. Her pay is higher than most Illinois State University presidents by between 10 and 40%. Along with this, the FY25, she will be getting a 7% salary increase and a 22% 457F retirement increase. These numbers don't include her performance bonuses. Her pay has increased significantly since 2018, which means her hourly rate has gone from around $217 per hour to around $292 per hour. The salaries of the provost and vice provost and vice presidents range from $93,000 to $349,000 a year. That means the average hourly pay is around $110 an hour. Whereas our wage starts at $16 an hour, with the median being approximately $32 an hour. With the positions I've mentioned, having salaries so high and being so many of them, why are you trying to eliminate some of the lowest paid employees on campus? The people that are doing work of such consequence that actually makes the university run with so much efficiency. There are employees on campus being compensated such a small amount that they frequently use food pantries. The average cost of living in Illinois is $58,000 a year. I would like to know if any of you would be able to survive on our wages. I would be interested to see you find housing for less than $1,000 a month, pay utilities, buy food, and heaven forbid you get sick or injured and have to have medication or hospitalization. When we ask for a living wage, it's not to be greedy. It's because we believe that we are all entitled to a living wage and we deserve it. We don't think that that is asking too much. I hope I'm not interrupting anyone's work on their tablets. I hope you take in what we've said here and really think about how all of this affects not only Local 1890, but all staff, faculty, and most of all the students on campus. Thank you.
Thank you. We have another speaker.
Yeah, one more public comment, and also let the record reflect Trustee Athis has arrived. Our last public comment is Mr. Tom Capron.
Tom Capron, Statistics and Actuarial Science, in excess of 20 years. I'm here to support my colleagues in the green shirts. If you are represented by 1890, please raise your hand. Thank you. How many of you have experienced a staff reduction in your departments? Very good. How many have picked up extra duties because of that loss of coworkers? Looks like about half. Who of you that have worked that extra, picked up that extra slack for an undetermined amount of time, got paid extra for that? None. God help me, I hate to ask this question, but who has worked overtime without getting paid. Stop doing it. Getting labor done with no pay has got a word. Think about it. That is absolutely criminal that that happens on this campus still. It used to be more prevalent, but it's getting better. But it ain't the best. We have all been told our departments to economize, having events with food to not have that unless it's a student-facing event. I get that. And I appreciate the Board of Trustees. It's all fit to not have the usual breakfast buffet out here. Thank you for economizing with the rest of us. Everybody here in a green shirt has a student-facing event every day. I would like what happens here in this with this economizing, with the specter of downsizing the workforce that performs these student-facing events, to think long and hard about the impact on the students. And for the community at large that is here, possibly the press, most of the people in the green shirts today live and work west of Route 59, between Elburn, Rochelle, Genoa, and Earlville. They do their working, they live here, they spend their money here. Conversely, those people on campus that get paid a whole lot more money than us, do most of their living and spending east of Route 59, not in this community. What happens in this room with this public body dramatically affects Sycamore, DeKalb area. That's all I got. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Chair, that concludes public comment.
Very good, very good. As I rush in, and I want to say my apologies as I catch my breath here, because I hate to be late, not necessarily because I hate to be late, but I hate to inconvenience others. So let's move on as quickly as we possibly can. The reports of the board committees and board liaisons can be found on agenda item 7. Do any of our trustees have questions or comments regarding the written reports, items 7A through 7F? Hearing none, I think we have a presentation by Catherine Squires, Vice President for Advancement and President and CEO of the NIU Foundation, will provide a verbal report for item 7G.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Catch your breath. I really appreciate this opportunity to speak with the Board of Trustees. I find this is more enthusiastic in terms of the work of philanthropy when I can actually speak it to you rather than submit it to you in a written report. So again, I appreciate very much the opportunity to be here this morning. I do have several slides to share with you today. I would first like to update you on some of the events of the past couple of months that have transpired since I saw you last in person. We have our usual philanthropic progress to date slides, which I think you will find motivating. We're going to take you through some interesting analysis of our giving in the context of some early campaign results, some topical information about some institutional efforts to address some of the federal funding issues that are plaguing the university and as well as the country, and end with some high-level information about our campaign launch event, which is now scheduled for June 14th. So if we could have the next slide, please. We've been quite busy since I saw you last, which was before the holidays, and we've had a great pleasure in hosting a number of very successful events, starting with the annual alumni holiday reception, which happened again this year at the Ivy Room, a relatively new venue for us. Second year was a wonderful evening, and I know many of you enjoyed the festivities, and that's always a wonderful feel-good event right before the holidays, so thank you for those of you who were able to attend. Of course, we went west to the famous Idaho Potato Bowl. Great win for the Huskies. We had a small but appreciative gathering of dedicated alums and sports fans who made the trip out. Upon return from Idaho past the holidays, we went on our typical swing through the great state of Florida, and we held events in Sarasota, Bonita Bay, and Fort Lauderdale. A real highlight of that trip for us was a lovely, elegant event hosted in Fort Lauderdale by this board and this institution's great friend, Sherilyn Muir, for alumni and guests, which included, of course, highlights from President Freeman of what's going on here at the university, which alums down there really appreciate hearing from her in person, and Dean Hill had a very strong contingent of College of Law alumni, so it was a really wonderful event there. And then staff recently returned from a trip to Arizona, where the alumni joined a Cubs win over the Sox, sorry for you Sox fans, in their preseason game, and a foundation brunch was hosted by the following day for invited donors. And I know a number of staff, as well as Matt Streb, President Freeman, and others, did a lot of individual engagement with donors who live in the area, which is all leading up towards the exciting success of the campaign. And then most recently, Advocacy Day occurred. On February 26, we had well over 60 Huskies participating this year in Springfield to advocate on behalf of NIU. And a post-Advocacy Day social was held where we had 13 alumni and 12 legislators attending, which was doesn't sound like big numbers, but it was a huge increase over last year. So a very successful Advocacy Day. Next slide, please. So the next couple of slides you've seen before in various forms. I'm pleased to share some key results from the recently completed full quarter, which ended December 31st, where our total philanthropic achievement surpassed the $53 million mark for the first time in our history, which was another high water mark due to, in great part, the most generous gift from the Bostert family of $40 million that came in that quarter, the first quarter, which at that time put it comfortably at about 88.5% of our goal through the first two quarters. On the cash side, we surpassed our stated goal for the year. Again, a significant gift from the Bosterts. First pledge payment was paid before the end of the year, so we're in a strong cash position at that time, which is important to the overall effort, of course. And then on the next slide, which looks suspiciously similar, if you could move the slide one more, thank you. This is a more up-to-date total. Nope, one more back. I'm sorry, Cindy. There we go. As of yesterday, we hit $57.4 million, so we've had a very robust first couple of months of this fiscal or this calendar year, and we now proudly stand at 96% of our $60 million university goal. Again, just a $40 million gift provides great opportunity, yeah. And we remember that the moment that gift came, we raised our goal. So this isn't 96% of the previous goal, so this is an accelerated goal. But here are some important context to accompany what we feel is a very strong position, which will lead us to some conclusions about the campaign readiness. Our pipeline remains incredibly strong, and I know Ray Earl Jackson is in the room who oversees all of the fundraising efforts. I wouldn't put this number in here without Ray having blessed it, but we have a very strong pipeline of about $12 million at this point. And it's very possible that a combination of major and planned gifts, possible or projected to even close by the end of this fiscal year, could once again significantly help us overperform our goal. And additionally, we have Huskies United upcoming, which is April 3rd. Second and third, and a great engagement opportunity for across the university for both unrestricted and targeted gifts for key areas, give us an opportunity again to continue pushing forward with our achievement. And basically underpinning all of this work has been preparation for the public phase of the campaign, of course, with our campaign case for support now aligning really firmly with the vision for NIU for the Forward campaign, the priorities that we've set forth, and the great conversations that are now happening with donors in alignment with that vision is really positioning us in a strong place. So the next slide, please. This should be probably too familiar to you by now. This is our campaign timeline and progress chart, which indicates that as we now stand on the cusp of 162 million, we are really in a very strong position to be able to launch the public phase of our campaign. So the momentum, again, of the last year's successful fundraising, followed by this historic gift from the Bostert family, which serves as the lead gift for our campaign, as well as a number of other significant outright gifts that continue to happen due to the great work of Ray and his team and others, we're heading into this next quarter in exactly the position we want to be in to say to the rest of the public, we are ready to go public with this campaign. So the pipeline's strong. We have a lot of confidence going into the next fiscal year. And I'll speak with you in a minute about the public launch. But I wanted you to sort of springboard off this planning slide into a couple of more detailed slides. We're going to take you into some confidence building details, which show you at a little bit more of a molecular level why we feel so confident. And there are a couple of slides coming. Cindy, we're going to go forward to the next one. And I know this is a lot to see on the screen, but I believe the trustees have this on your PowerPoint. These are meant to illustrate by looking at our campaign phases in really two tranches. There were the 3 years that defined what we would call the pre-campaign phase. So fiscal 19, 20, and 21. And then the phase in which we now sit, which we're calling the leadership phase. In campaign parlance, sometimes that's called the quiet phase. And if we look at our performance in these 2 3-year segments, there's some important features here to point out. This first slide, which is an overall growth comparison of our campaign activity in those two phases, at the highest level shows that we've grown 63.8% from our pre-campaign phase to the current leadership phase, which represents a little over a $30 million increase. And if we looked at major giving, which is gifts in a certain band within that big number, major gifts has grown almost 74% in that same 3-year tranche, if you compare phases. And this growth really indicates a number of things. And this analysis holds true for this slide as well as the next one. We made an investment in professional staff a few years ago. And this is the fruit of that investment, where gift officers have hit their stride. The maturing of the fundraising core in collaboration with the development of our relationships, the alumni engagement that has happened over these years, which for years wasn't happening quite at the level it has, is really the bread and butter of how we get numbers like this. It is proof that that investment is returning the results that were promised. There's also, importantly, a real excitement about this campaign. The first 3 years, the pre-campaign phase, we didn't have a case for support. In this leadership phase, we have a case for support. It's being tested every time we take a version of that case out to an individual donor or to a group. I know we're going to talk a little bit later about what's going on in support of the revitalization of Greek life, and there's been a lot of sharing out in the Greek market, so to speak, about the case for support for building a center for Greek life. And when we are able to take that story out into the donor community, there is such incredible enthusiasm about what we're doing here. And again, numbers like this don't happen without a great case for support and without a committed force of collaborators who are in the field talking to donors and alumni about why they should be involved philanthropically at NIU. So if we look at where we stand year to date, which are the last two columns on these slides, we're only 8 months in, and we're already seeing almost in every one of these bands the same kind of continued growth that we've seen if we compare the two campaign phases. So, Cindy, I'm going to ask you to skip the next slide and go to the one that's titled Endowment at the top. There you are. Thank you. So this is a similar slide than the last one that just talks about endowment growth over those same couple of periods. Again, as we see the growth in these respective gift bands, in terms of dollars as well as number of gifts, and I think most notably, I'll say that while the top level gifts are impressive and important, what's really meaningful is the growth and the number of donors at the lower bands. Remember, we think of things in a pyramid all the time, and while we appreciate and need things to happen at the top level, it's the middle of a pyramid, whether it's annual funds, major gifts, endowments. These are donors who give at levels that don't necessarily put their names on buildings, for example, but it's the bread and butter of a healthy program. And Trustee Barsima has asked these questions many times. What are we doing at the middle level and at the base of the pyramid? And I think, you know, endowment as well as the annual fund slide, which we skipped over, but I'll send you a version of that slide, really shows that we're doing our work at the base and in the middle of the pyramid. And these are just really important statistics as we look at the stability of the program long term. So while this number is not on the slide that I'm showing you, overall giving to the endowment in these periods has been up 114% in these two comparative phases of our campaign. So given the prominence that our endowment occupies in our case for support, I'll not test you on this, but the third pillar is sustainability. And we talk as much about fiscal sustainability and the growth of our endowment as we talk about environmental sustainability. This is just incredibly impactful as we do whatever we can through the efforts of this campaign to tell that story about the need for NIU to transform the size and impact of its endowment. So the next slide, I'm going to kind of get out of the weeds a little bit more and tell you about an example of a campaign-related event that happened most recently, which was Husky Trek Talks, which was held here on campus on March 1st, very successfully. Trek Talks, as you probably remember, is an activity of the strategic development team, which is a strong collaboration that was launched in 2020, guided by this collaboration of the NIU Foundation, the Office of Research and Innovation Partnerships, the Office of Engagement and Regional Development, and Academic Affairs. And this team aims to improve institutional synergy through the development and execution of strategies that align research, engagement, and resource development. So Trek Talks is quickly becoming what I would consider a marquee event for the team, serving as an important stage upon which to celebrate the innovative spirit of NIU faculty, staff, and students in an effort to deepen the connections between innovators and the funding community. So Trek Talks 2025, which was our second effort, was a tremendous success. We had over 150 of our best friends and supporters coming to campus on a beautiful Saturday afternoon to sit in the Duke Ellington Ballroom to hear a number of remarkable presentations from NIU faculty, staff, and students. We had another several dozen joining us online. And these presentations that they witnessed that day through Trek Talks showcased not only the profound nature of the respective work of these innovators, but also the humanity that they bring, the passion and the humanity that they bring to their work. Many of the presentations were done live, several of them were done via video, and all were vying for some grant support to help support their visions for their projects and programs, which was a funding collaboration, again, of the sponsors, if you will, of the strategic development team. Most notably, I will have to get in a plug for the grants committee of the NIU Foundation that provided the substantial bulk of the funding. But overall, we had representatives from five colleges that submitted pitches that were then vetted and put on display here. And the recipients received a total of $65,000 in total grants, along with an additional graduate assistantship that was provided to one faculty member for his important work investigating how AI technology can assist with addressing autism in young children, which was a spectacular presentation. So all in all, Trek Talks is proving to be a most effective strategy for engaging our innovators and showcasing their important research and programs to a broader community of potential funding collaborators and funders. And already we've seen some important philanthropy that's materialized through this effort, and we expect that this to be a continuing, exciting addition to our funding strategies going forward. So next slide, please. Another important outgrowth of the strategic development team's efforts has been the creation through a strong internal synergy around new opportunities, and we're calling this the Husky Frontier Team. In response to the emergent need to identify and seek alternative funding, especially new relationships due to what we all see as an endless but rapidly changing federal landscape, the Husky Frontier Team was recently formed with a mandate to support faculty and staff in the development of alternative funding streams, ultimately broadening and diversifying NIU's research portfolio, funding portfolio. Dr. Richard Makarski, who's here, has been the strong guiding hand for what truly has represented a pivot towards a more diversified portfolio for research that's inclusive of a more focused engagement strategy for the corporate sector and for some industry relationships. And this strong collaboration, again, established initially through the work of the strategic development team collaboration, has really paved the way for this new work and is helping to accelerate our ability to partner across the university because those relationships are already established. And there are several streams of activity. This is a very early stage report, so I'm sure this will continue to evolve, but being able to respond quickly to emergent needs, identifying revenue sources for what are traditionally externally funded activities that support student success and community engagement. We also want to use this mechanism to help build our institutional capacity longer term to develop and execute on industry partnerships and corporate relationships that will really support these new collaborations going forward. And then more tactically, to help our faculty navigate through engagement activities, what will continue, we fear, to be a continuing changing federal landscape. And to that last point, just this week, in fact, a series of workshops took place on campus to engage and support faculty in the development of what I'm learning, Richard, called new collaborative clusters of opportunity. And hot off the presses, here are a few highlights. The team launched 3 events. 2 were held in person, 1 was held virtually. Over 160 faculty registered to attend these sessions, and 128 of them actually attended. And Richard and I were just talking before the meeting, there was a great word of mouth enthusiasm that happened after the first session, and we saw some folks register the night before the next session because they were hearing from their colleagues that this was valuable. And some of the output, you know, the clusters that are emerging from this conversation are generally well known to us already as known strengths, severe weather, high energy physics, and sustainability being 3 of them. But what also emerged in these conversations were a number of new potential opportunities that represent areas that we can explore further, which I think is really, really exciting. So there are identified already new next steps for this team. They're going to, of course, follow up with these deeper dive workshops with the faculty in the cluster areas that were identified. The Frontier team plans to work directly with the faculty to help them progressively elaborate on the identified key characteristics and specific domains of expertise within the clusters that can be built up and leveraged through this effort. They'll use these activities to continue building generally the capacity to do this kind of collaborative work across the ecosystem of NIU, which will enhance the culture of innovation here through the provision of multiple avenues for engagement, ranging from formal to more social opportunities. I think, in other words, designing a schedule of engagement events that designed to meet faculty where they are is a real mantra for this team. Simultaneously, they plan to conduct some intensive prospect research and development, which is where the partnership with the foundation comes in. Identifying and engaging its essential partners is what we do very well from a prospect research and development perspective. So this partnership will utilize all of the various capabilities of the 4 areas that I mentioned in creative ways coming together around this subset of issues for us in an exciting new way. And we hope that as these clusters continue to develop, that there's an there's a dramatic increase, if you will, in sort of the identified opportunities for us going forward. So it's a very exciting time. I think it feels like there's a lot that's moving and shifting. It's chaotic at times, but when you step back and you focus on the resources and try to solve problems in new ways, it moves a lot of things along in a very positive way. And this is but another example of the work that's really coming out of the collaboration that began in 2020, which I think we can all be very proud about. So my final slide, last one, Cindy, is to just essentially give you a save the date for the June 14th official launch date for the campaign, which we have named Forward. A collaborative team is working very hard to produce an event that is more than just a kickoff. We're planning this as the moment that we ignite the enthusiasm, rally our community, and really set the stage for the transformational impact of our campaign. I can't tell you exactly what number we'll be at that time, but well over 50% of what we believe our planned goal will likely be. And this is the time when we are loud and proud with the rest of the world about this incredible campaign and the impact that it will have for our students, our faculty, and beyond. So our goal is to have between 500 and 700 people in the room. We're going to use the Convocation Center to do it. It will not look like a basketball arena that day, but we're assembling a welcome reception, a campaign launch program, and a post-launch event program for all that are able to attend. And we'll continue to work with our partners across the university. This is a family affair for us here at NIU. And I know that this will be an event that we'll be very proud of as we launch our campaign into its public face. So save the dates are coming in your mailbox, and we encourage you to mark your calendars if you haven't already. And that ends my slides. So I'm happy to answer any questions. And if there are questions about the Husky Frontier team, Richard is also here to answer any questions you might have. But thank you for your time.
Thank you. Trustees, do you have any questions? Yes. Trustee Barsema.
Oh, thank you, Chair. Well, first of all, before I ask my question, Catherine, I haven't seen the agenda for the June meeting yet, but I assume that you're not going to present at that meeting. So this will be the last meeting that you present
you're
at
stealing
for
my
the
thunder.
Trustees. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, but go ahead.
I will
actually,
give
Trustee Barsema,
thank you.
She will present it. The June meeting.
Oh, okay.
I thought you were letting me off the
will.
Hook.
Yeah, she will present at the June meeting.
Okay.
Never mind.
Well, I won't be at the June meeting, so let me say thank you for all of the service that you've given to NIU, to the foundation. One of the goals of us all is to leave it better than we found it, and you clearly have done that. So thank you for the past decade plus that you have given to us, and you will be missed, but we know you have put it in good hands with Ray and Mike, and we look forward to what they're going to do for it going forward. Remember the slogan, make it better than how you found it, right? So that's your goal. But Catherine, thank you.
Thank you. Yes. Appreciate it.
Question I do have is if we go back to, I don't think the slides are numbered, but I think slides probably 3 and 4, the philanthropy report for
yes.
Q2 and the year to date. The $60 million goal for fiscal year 25, does that include the Bowster Bawell gift?
The goal was lower before the Bowster gift came,
right.
And we raised it when it did come.
Because what I'm trying to do is get a feel for if you extract the one large gift out, how would we be on a year-to-date basis? Would we be on track?
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit to that?
Ray, can you remind me what the goal was before we raised it? 30. Yeah.
30 million. So if I take the 40 million, I'm assuming all 40 of the Bowster Bawell gift is in the year-to-date number?
Yes, it is.
So yep. If I take that out, we'd be at 50, 7 million. We'd be at 17 million on a year-to-date basis against the goal of 30. You said. Okay,
right.
So we would be just a little over 100% on a year of a year-to-date quota.
We'd be about 50% of that goal.
Well, right.
If
you take it into force, you'd be where you're supposed to be, maybe a little bit ahead.
We'd be right on pace.
You'd be right on pace.
And again,
okay.
The pipeline piece is important, knowing that we have 12
right.
million strong possible, if not
okay.
probable, to close.
Great. Good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Captain Dennis stole our thunder there about the praise that we were going to give you. You know I've been a fan of yours for years. And I'm looking forward to great things, even after you leave here. I know you're going to do great things. The question I'd have for you is, how are we teaching our young people on campus that their time, treasure, and talent is something that should be shared with the university years after they leave the university?
So one of the things that we've been doing a lot of talking about in the last couple of years in particular is doing a lot more around organizing class gifts and things of that nature. I've probably said it way too many times, but you know, public universities learn a lot from the way privates have done philanthropy for a long time, and I think private universities have had these traditions of gigantic annual funds that are unrestricted. Oh, but for that, would we be in great shape, right? And the fact that our we don't really do student philanthropy in the ways that when you take your first step on a college campus in a private university, you're pretty much told that, you know, this is going to be part of it. And in a university like this, of course, it's a different conversation. I think we've had to work collaboratively with a number of student groups over the course of years to get the general student population understanding who we are, what we do, how we do it. Which inevitably leads to how can we get involved? What do you need from us? I think we do an excellent job with the students that receive scholarships. I think we see many of them come back and give, but there hasn't been as much of an organized strategy around, you know, class gifts and things like that. Mm-hmm. But that conversation is now actually getting some traction, and I think it's an evolution here as opposed to a very large or quick turn in one direction or another. So we know that's an opportunity. We haven't done mm-hmm. the best we can do there, but it's very much in the forefront, and I think you'll hear more going forward about the strategies we'll employ beyond class giving to enhance the understanding yeah. about the importance of student philanthropy.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yes, Trustee Wadsworth.
Catherine, thank you. This is great. I look forward to your presentation in June. So
me too, now that I know I have to give one.
Yeah. So I know one of the trustees wanted to just get you out, but I'm looking forward to June.
Thank you.
So just kidding, Dennis. But I'm curious about, I mean, whenever we talk about these types of dollars and everything that's involved, I know a lot of this stuff is restricted. So it's not just, here's some money, go ahead and spend it. So of this amount that we've raised just within this past year here, how much on a percentage basis is of that is restricted, would you
say?
I may
flunk that test, Ray. Do you know?
Mm-hmm. I'm very hesitant to give you
ballpark.
Ballpark restricted, I'll just say more restricted than it's
not. Okay, so it's above 50%, which is kind of what I thought. But I just think that, you know, it's a great thing. Yes, we'll take the money and everything, but our hands are tied with some of it as well.
We try as hard as we can possibly try to ask for unrestricted gifts,
yeah.
which are the hardest possible things to both ask for and
yeah.
get.
Yeah.
And every organization would give you that same answer. But we'll get you numbers because they're okay. better than they've been. I think that there has been movement over the last probably 5 or 6 years in particular, wouldn't you guys agree? Because we're asking differently. We've made the Northern Fund 100% unrestricted. We have an annual fund that's still here, unlike a private university, includes some mixed in restricted gifts because donors have been used to giving that way. But you're not gonna change the results there unless you ask differently. And part of what makes unrestricted revenue work is the immense amount of trust that donors have in the leadership, which they do here.
Yep.
And I think President Freeman has done an exceptional job being transparent, being authentic, being engaging with donors, building trust that we're moving the university in the right direction that deserves a check from a donor that says, use this for the area of greatest need. But you have to behave yourself into that state of being, and you have to have an engagement core and a group of gift officers that are comfortable telling that story, telling it well, telling it religiously. And so, you know, we had a gift fee for years that was very unpopular because we needed to drive unrestricted revenue into the coffers another way. We've abandoned that in its breadth. We have a very reasonable fee, which is now 5%, very consistent with the way in which other universities sort of tax philanthropy, although we don't like to use that word.
Yeah.
Moreover, we're asking as a part of every gift that the donor would consider making a portion of their gift unrestricted. And that is okay. Changing the calculus. You know, right, Ray? I mean, that's part of the reason why we're seeing more success. But if you still looked at the corpus under management today, we're probably 96% restricted, which is delightful for those programs, but it's hard.
My point on that is that, you know, we're a state university. A lot of people would think we just get all our money from the university, but 30 years ago, we were getting 75% of our money. Today, it's 17%, and it's falling. So therefore, what you're doing becomes so much more important, and then the extra wrinkle is what's restricted and what's not.
Correct.
So we have to pull a lot more levers to balance what we're doing here.
We do.
Yeah.
We do.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Any other comments or questions for Catherine? Again, thank you very much.
Don't say goodbye to me quite yet.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Yet.
Thank you, Catherine.
See you in June.
Yes. Thank you very much. We will now move to President's Report number 187. President Freeman, will you please present the report? We'll let people filter out. Thank you.
As noted previously, the following items have been moved to consent agenda. Agenda item 8A1, recommendations for faculty and support of professional staff sabbatical leaves for the 2025-26 academic year. Agenda item 8A2, request for the deletion of the Master of Science in Early Childhood Education. Agenda item 8A3, request for the deletion of the Master of Science in Teaching. Agenda item 8A4, request for new minor in accountancy.
Thank you. Trustees, may I have a motion to approve consent agenda items as read by President Friedman?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second, Anthus.
Any discussion? All in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Any objections? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
Information items 8B1 through 8B11 were discussed at the February 20th, 2025 committee meetings. Is there interest from our board members in revisiting any of these forwarded information items?
No, we've gone through this.
Okay, hearing none, we'll move to items directly from the president. Agenda item 8C1 is being presented to the board directly from the president. Members of the university leadership team look forward to answering any questions and taking any comments following the presentation. Agenda item 8C1 is revitalization of Greek life presentation, and I'd like to introduce it with a little bit of background before turning the podium over to our speakers. In September 2021, Northern Illinois University, under my direction, established the Presidential Task Force on the Revitalization of Greek Life. This initiative aimed to increase the challenges facing Greek life on campus and to reimagine the Greek community to better align with the needs of modern students. The task force included representatives from all four Greek councils, as well as alumni, NIU administrators, as well as a DeKalb community representative. Throughout 2021 and 2022 academic year, the task force conducted extensive research, including listening sessions, focus groups, and surveys with students, alumni, parents, and the broader community. In November 2022, the task force presented a comprehensive report that included specific recommendations for addressing issues such as declining membership, student conduct concerns, and the need for more inclusive and service-oriented engagement. Following the report, NIU's Division of Student Affairs began implementing a multi-year plan to revitalize Greek life, making clear that their goals for Greek life were more expansive than conduct enforcement and included building a sense of community and belonging, strengthening academic performance and leadership skills across the Greek councils, and increasing service to and engagement with our local community. At the same time, NIU also aimed to strengthen connections with Greek alumni. NIU's annual university goals have consistently supported the revitalization of Greek life because these goals align with NIU's mission. For instance, the 2023 university goals emphasize the importance of prioritizing task force recommendations and creating clear implementation and accountability plans. The 2024 goals focused on advancing the planning and execution of the Center for Greek Life project in partnership with the NIU Foundation. Today, we have a presentation from the Director of Fraternity and Sorority Life that will show how the revitalization efforts have already led to a more vibrant and inclusive Greek community at NIU, as well as what we are most excited about going forward. I'm going to let our speaker introduce herself in a fair amount of detail. Vicky, please come to the podium and proceed.
Good morning, and thank you very much for the introduction, President Freeman. My name is Vicky Gerentis. I'm currently serving as the Director of Fraternity and Sorority Life, and I thank you all so much for the opportunity to share a little bit more about our community and what we've been up to. Next slide, please. Next slide. Thank you. So a little bit, I did want to introduce our team. Our team is very new in the Office of Fraternity and Sorority Life. I joined campus in November, and so I'm coming to you all with experience having worked in fraternity and sorority life at Illinois Institute of Technology, San Jose State University, as well as having alumni engagement and advancement experience at two fraternity headquarters and my alma mater, Lake Forest College. Next slide, please. My team is here today, so we are very excited to be able to be here. Senior Associate Director Mackenzie Pendry joined us in December, so again, very new team, about 5 months in here, and she is coming to us having worked the last 4 years at University of Iowa, has extensive experience working with Interfraternity Council and the IFC, and we are very lucky to have her experience and expertise here with us. Next slide, please. And finally, I would be remiss if I did not also include our graduate assistant, Natalie Morey. Natalie is in the second year of the counseling program here at Northern Illinois and is truly the backbone to this team. She's been here for the last year and has built great relationships with the students, keeps us on our toes, and so together we have been getting to know each other as well as the community at large. Next slide, please. So in getting to know one another, we had to sit down and figure out very quickly how are we going to support the students. We put together a coaching model in which all three of us share the responsibility of getting to know our chapters and our councils, serving as advisors and coaches. All three of us have a portfolio of chapters in all four councils where we get to share our knowledge but also learn a little bit more about every aspect of our community. In the majority of these meetings, we are meeting with the chapter presidents, so the leaders of these organizations who really bear the burden of leading their peers and leading on campus and being the front-facing individuals. So they really rely on us for some advice and some coaching, and we've been very pleased to meet with them and to get to know them a little bit more. Mackenzie was so gracious to put together a bit of an assessment for us to understand what are these meetings really like, what are they producing, what are they showing us. And so in that, we are really looking at are the chapters thriving, striving, struggling, or concerning. I'm glad to report that most of our groups are in the striving category, which in a time of revitalization makes sense. So thank you so much for, you know, the opportunity to be able to sort of report on how those efforts have been going, and we look forward to more as well. Next slide, please. Next slide. And so for a brief overview, if you're not familiar with our Fraternity and Sorority Life community, the community is split into four councils. They are the governing bodies of the 38 active chapters. These councils are either just fraternities, just sororities, or a mix of fraternities and sororities. Our Interfraternity Council is preparing for its annual tradition of tugs, if you are familiar, so a little bit more on that later. Our Multicultural Greek Council is fraternities and sororities made up of groups that are historically multicultural, so they may be Latinx, Asian, multicultural, and many of our students in those organizations really find community and a sense of belonging here on campus. We also have National Panhellenic Council, NPHC, also known as the Divine Nine. While seven are active, we are actually working on activating the remaining two organizations in the next school year. We are very lucky that all nine are chartered and that all nine will hopefully be active in the next school year. And then our Panhellenic Council is our sorority council, and so they are, some of those groups have houses on Greek Row, similar to IFC, and they're actively working towards their recruitment efforts that will happen in the fall. And probably most importantly and excitingly, we are bringing back Order of Omega, which is the Greek Honor Society. It recognizes students for their scholarship, their commitment to service, and their leadership experience on campus. So very excited to have initiation this upcoming semester. Next slide, please. And you may be asking how many students are involved. We had 882 students involved in the fall 2024 semester, with 281 of those being new students or new members to the experience. And I'm actually very excited to share with you that as of this week, we've hit the 900 threshold with new students coming into the experience this spring. So that's very exciting. We are seeing growth, and we look forward to more of that in the spring as recruitment efforts are underway during the beginning of the school year. And about 7.9% as of the fall semester make up the overall fraternity and sorority community of the undergraduate students. Next slide, please. I also wanted to include the 2024 grade report. All of these organizations are founded at colleges and universities. They have a common goal and a common value of academics and scholarship. So this is important to all of our groups, and they're constantly striving to make sure that they are connected to resources on campus, that they're connected to us to understand how to be more successful as students. That's why they're here. We want to see them graduate. We want to retain them. We want to see their success moving forward. And so we look forward to increasing this over time as well, but it has increased, you know, since 2020 and 2021, when a lot of this, you know, effort sort of started and began as well. Next slide, please. I included this slide here, and really it is not even encapsulating all of the moments and all of the engagement and impact that we have as a fraternity sorority life community. But in the fall, our Husky Hub platform for student orgs and marketing of the student org experience captured 742 events within fraternity and sorority life, with over 30,000, you know, impact moments. So one-on-one engagement opportunities for students in the community, outside of the community, faculty, staff, all of our constituents. Again, that's not even wrapping our head around all the small moments that happen, all of the impromptu moments that happen, all of the engagement opportunities. This is a community on campus that helps with affinity, that helps with connection to campus. We can't even quantify it if we really wanted to holistically, but this is a great way that we're able to show that and demonstrate that to you. Next slide, please. Next slide. As President Freeman mentioned and gave you a little bit of a background on the revitalization report that was issued in the fall of 2022, many folks before me and our team have come and have done a great amount of work on the recommendations that were included in that report. We are coming in new and taking a look at those recommendations and seeing what has been done, what has not been done. Is it still meeting the needs of our students today and our organizations today? And really trying to figure out what kind of impact can we make short term and long term so that we can meet many of those recommendations. Next slide, please. In terms of updates, there are many, probably more than we can even fit on one slide for you all. We've increased the staffing. We've made more visibility for some of our councils, like NPHC, in the dedication and installation of the NPHC yard plots on campus. We've implemented an FSL, Fraternity Sorority Life Ambassador Program, so we have students from that experience here today as well. So many different things that we're excited about. The Center for Greek Life was mentioned earlier by Catherine Squires, and so next slide, please. I'd like to chat about that one a little bit more. I think the most exciting part of this is that it is engaging our students, it's engaging our alumni, it's engaging so many constituents that we have for the university. At the fall homecoming event, there was a kickoff to sort of share more about this experience and this project. I'm very excited to share the land is secured, the fundraising efforts are underway, there's a dedicated community, and there's constant conversation about how does the program today need to elevate itself so that when this building is here, that we can really graduate into the next phase of the experience here on campus. This is also very on trend. In February, the University of Texas at Arlington actually unveiled their Center for Greek Life, so I hope Northern Illinois is the next in that endeavor as well. Next slide, please. In sort of like exciting news and things that we've been up to, Mackenzie arrived again in December and quickly asked, hey, can we take a few of our students to one of the most immersive programs that there are for fraternity and sorority life leaders across the country? It's called AFLV, or the Association for Fraternal Leadership and Values Conference. This is 3,000 to 4,000 students from across the country coming together to talk about sorority, to talk about fraternity, to meet with industry professionals, to hear really what is going on and what is on trend, to meet with vendors and figure out what kind of technology and things do we need to see to help our experience and expand our experience. So we had 8 students go on this conference. They came back very excited with a lot of ideas, many that have already been implemented. And so we really do look forward to being able to represent Northern Illinois in the future at this conference and moving forward. This is one of the many opportunities that our students have in this experience. So next slide, please. Next slide. This is the end of the school year. We are really ramping up in terms of events and things that are going on. Again, not an exhaustive list, but this is a time of celebration. This is a time of really recognizing the hard work that our students have put into the year. We have chapters that are having grand openings of new houses on Greek Row. We have new members joining our organizations through new member presentations and probates. Many philanthropy events that are taking place to highlight important causes in the area. I mean, there are so many different things that are going on, and we really look forward to the next few weekends and weeks where we will be here late to support our students in the many things that they are up to. Next slide, please. And in terms of what's next, what's coming up in the next academic year, I think for revitalization, you do need to take a look at the organizations that are here and see where is there opportunity for some to return, some to come new, some to actually revitalize the experience that we are having. So our team is really looking at expansion policies and how we work with campus partners, fraternity, sorority, national headquarters, to really make sure that that's a successful transition if they choose to come here. We're looking at marketing opportunities, so how do we work with admissions, orientation, career services, all these different departments that I've been meeting with throughout this past semester. How do we market the experience better online and on the website? The website is slowly being revamped and revitalized as well. This is the main place that parents and students will also go to in order to learn more about this experience. So again, many opportunities upcoming in the school year, but we are really working on how our team can meet those revitalization recommendations as well. Next slide. All right, I do really thank you all. I mean, that is the really like brief overview of what is going on in fraternity and sorority life. I care very deeply about this experience. I do believe that it is one of the rare opportunities on a college campus that students have to play in the sandbox on leadership, to really understand who they are as individuals and where they want to go. I would like to invite Jacoby Jones up to the podium here for you all to get to know him as well. He's actually a junior on campus and a very proud member of Kappa Alpha Psi Fraternity Incorporated, which is part of our NPHC Council. So Jacoby, if you do not mind, if you can share a little bit more about who you are, where you're from, and why fraternity? Why has fraternity been so important to you at NIU?
Thank you for the introduction. So my name is Jacoby Jones. I am currently the president of the Student Government Association for the 56th session. I am also the vice president of my fraternity, the Epsilon Omicron chapter of Kappa Alpha Psi. So like most college students, my experience started in high school, but it wasn't until March, April, where I was like, well, maybe I should go to college. So I am a first generation college student, so I didn't know nothing about college. I didn't have no scholarships. None of my friends went to school, so I really took a leap of faith. So I remember, and it would feel like yesterday, the last orientation group that I was a part of. It was the last one, so like I missed about 4, 5, 6 of them. So I get there, I'm with my mom, and she's like, well, everybody calls me Kobe, so she's like, Kobe, you got to go to every table. You have to. Like, I don't care if it's, you know, whatever club. So I seen Kappa Alpha Psi, and they were the only members of NPHC there. So, you know, I walked up to them. They were like, hey, nice to meet you. They said, if you ever need help, we're here on campus. So I remember the rest of the summer, which was 2 weeks, and I was just thinking like, well, maybe I should look for those guys. So when I got to campus, the first thing I did was join Black Male Initiative. And one of the members of Black Male Initiative was also in this fraternity, Kappa Alpha Psi, and he told me, get a good GPA. You know, you want to do good in school. So I ended up with a 3.5 GPA. And then Ray Jackson here, he taught me how to do scholarships. And this was all because I wanted to join a fraternity. So I would like to say that, to me, NIU is where you dream big. I really didn't think I would be in college, and now I'm the president of student government, so that's pretty cool. I would like to give a shout out to the FSL department, but also the Department of Student Affairs. Like, every time I see them, they're smiling at me, telling me they're proud of me, telling me we're doing good work and to keep it up. So I really want to shout them out. One of the experiences being in a fraternity that I really enjoyed was actually Tugs. It was mentioned earlier, but Tugs is intense. I never knew. And I found out it's only an NIU thing. Like, nobody else goes as hard at Tugs except NIU, which is weird, but I guess. So, but yeah, I remember being in like the pit, and like they were just like, yeah, it was an experience, I would say. I would also like to say, being in my fraternity, it was like really meaningful when we went to Advocacy Day, and I wore my best sweater there, and I'm wearing it now. And everybody was like, I really like your sweater, but besides that, I seen how many representatives of like fraternities and sororities that are like higher up, like at the Capitol. So they were all acknowledging us, acknowledging NIU, and they had nice things to say about us. And to wrap it up, the last thing I would like to say is that, like I said, I'm a first generation college student, but I have an older brother who never went to college. And now he's enrolled into community college with dreams of becoming an NIU Husky and furthering those dreams and joining my fraternity. So I would like to say that's what FSL means. FSL is not where you are in your fraternity, is passing it on to someone else. So that's what I've been able to do. So thank you.
Very good.
So thank you, Jacobia, and I would like to open it up for any questions that folks have for either one of us.
First, let me be the first to start. I'm a non-Greek, so let the non-Greek start it off.
Sure.
A GDI.
There you go. I want to throw you a softball first and say, what is that 1911? What does that mean?
That's when we were founded, January 5th, 1911.
Okay, you were founded. So you mentioned during the course of your presentation about grade point averages increasing, I believe, in the sororities 2% and the fraternities 7%, if my memory serves me correct. I'm not sure what the time frame was, but was there something that was done intentional to raise GPAs, and has that been embedded in the system, or was it a one-off?
Yeah, I think the fraternity sorority grade point averages are also increasing, or on par with the way that the average student is also increasing too. So things to think about are also the time that we're in, kind of our current college student experience to transition in learning, either in high school or in college after, you know, the pandemic occurred too. So we are, you know, kind of working through that phase as well. I think what our team is able to do though is we put together grade point average reports for them, where they can see all of their members and where those members fall, in a way that we are working with them one-on-one to say, hey, it looks like this individual is really struggling this past semester, right? What is it in your academic plan that you have created here on this campus or through your national organization that they can get more connected and more supported through the organization, but also on campus, how can we connect you to tutoring centers or resources as well?
Love that. Mm-hmm. Now, before you got to the podium, Vice President Squires gave a report about giving, et cetera. Is there something embedded in the Greek life system that teaches them to give back after graduation?
So, you want to go for it?
Yeah, so we have, like, the alums go so, so far back. I think we were chartered in 1968, so it goes as far back as that. And they help us, but they also help other chapters, so they can help, let's say, I know some of my alums, they help sometimes in IFC or vice versa, so really it's the knowledge that they pass on, but I think that IFC is becoming more progressive and everybody kind of helps everybody else out. So
time, treasure, and talent, remember that,
yes.
Okay, to move forward. And the other thing I wanted to tell you is that, you know, as you sit on this board, we got two former Student Association presidents sitting here.
Really?
Yes. Yes. So I want to open it up to the floor to the other trustees. Trustee Wildwood.
Thanks for the presentation. I'm kind of curious. By the way, just Cap Alpha Psi, something came to mind here. About a year and a half ago, I was in Montgomery, Alabama. In the hotel I was in, there was a regional conference for Cap Alpha Psi. And I think I was on the sixth floor. I got on the elevator, and all these Cap Alpha Psi people came on, and young and older. And I was amazed on the way down. I'm like, what's going on? And I mean, they had me on there for six floors, giving me the elevator pitch, if you will.
They'll do that.
Yes. I was very impressed. That's for sure. Well, definitely a lifelong commitment as far as that goes. So good luck on getting your brother in. But I'm curious about the vision going forward. Obviously, we were in an area here where, like a lot of universities, trying to get rid of Greek life. Now we're trying to revitalize Greek life. What's your vision moving forward 5 years from now? What looks success? What does success look like for you?
Sure. I'll add a little bit more here. I think hopefully the center is on its way or it's up. You know, that would be wonderful, but that certainly takes time. Again, the building is a place where all the programs that we hope to have and do are only enhanced. A space that's dedicated to, you know, classroom learning for fraternity and sorority life would be wonderful. Meeting rooms that are dedicated to our council so they can do work and do this kind of thing that happens here in the boardroom, right, that they don't always get to do and don't have necessarily a dedicated space to host their things and hold their meetings. The opportunity to bring alumni and speakers to campus in a place that holds, you know, enough folks and things. The vision is that our students are caring about one another, their academic success, their philanthropic success, their leadership success. Yes, they're turning to us for that coaching and that support, but they're also models and they set the example for the students on this campus who want to be involved. It can be fraternity sorority life that you get involved in, but it can really be anything on campus, right? You do not have to be in Cap Alpha Psi to be SGA president, but certainly knowing the connections may be able to take you into your next leadership journey on this campus as
well. I think our student trustee has come from Greek life probably almost every year I've been on the board. So, but I was kind of looking more at numbers here, though. So 7% right now is in Greek life. Is there a vision for something higher than that?
Yeah. Or so it's 7.9% right now. I think it's what's important to also understand about our organizations is you can't really put a number and say every group needs to be at 50 or every group needs to be at 100 members. Yeah. Some groups only want to be about 10 or 15 members. Some groups only aim to be 50 or 30. So it's really, what is the sustainability and the success of that particular organization, and are they meeting it financially? You know, experience in siblinghood and brotherhood and sisterhood. Are they, you know, excelling in school? Are they meeting philanthropic expectations? We want a thriving community and thriving organization. The numbers can grow based on how many organizations we have here, how big the organizations want to be. You know, I think in terms of what percent of the university, I think it could be closer to 10 if we really wanted to get there one day, but for now we are at
7%. But is that viewed as thriving compared to other universities? 10%?
I think that just depends on the type of university. So, you know, you have some
like
universities.
U of I is always kind of put on a pedestal.
Sure, and a lot of organizations are like single letter chapters are founded at some of those universities too, so there's a much larger alumni base, longstanding tradition. You know, there's a little bit more of a history in some of those universities as well. Yeah.
Thank you.
I would love to hear from Kobe too.
Yes, go for it.
So in the next 5 years, like I said, I do believe that FSL is more progressive, like we're all coming together. I never thought I'd be at Tugs, but I was at Tugs. So like, I think that it definitely will grow in numbers. Like even my fraternity, we're growing and we're all trying to find new ways to excel in whatever council we're in, but we're also leaning on other councils for help as well. So not just staying in the box of MPHC and thinking, MPHC has done something the same way for 25 years, so we won't change it. I think in the next 5 years, we're looking at, you know, to be more open to other councils. And with that, I think not taking different traditions, but learning about each other will ultimately grow.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Just see around.
Thank you. I'd like to follow up on that question for you, Kobe. When you think about what this has done for you, you know, and the support that the community has provided you, how do you envision making sure that other folks from where, you know, other Black learners like yourself know about the community of support that we've got here at NIU? Like, how will you open that door?
I say that being in other student leadership positions, typically they know, like, oh, Kobe's in a fraternity, so, you know, maybe if I'm interested, I'll talk to him about it. But just being in those spaces, going to different tutoring, wearing some of my letters, maybe people will be like, well, he's a regular student like me. So I think that's where the difference matters, is just seeing them. Yeah, they're a part of a group of people, an organization, but also he wouldn't mind helping me with my tire or something. You know, just being a person before I'm, you know, a part of Greek life is what matters to me. And I think that students will see that. They'll see me doing well in leadership positions, and they'll want to be in those leadership positions. And hopefully they also want to join my fraternity. So
there you go. Trustee O'Brien.
Yeah, of course. Well done, Kobe, first of all. I came here fall of 21, and I can confidently say I wouldn't be sitting here if I had not joined Greek life, and it's had such a profound impact on me, both personally and professionally. And really, in fall of 21, that's when the Revitalization Task Force was created, and chapters were in a state of survival after COVID. Chapters couldn't recruit for a year or two in certain cases, and really kind of put the entire ecosystem in a shock, in a survival mode. So I think really throughout my time here, throughout the past 4 years, and looking forward kind of in the next 5 years, to kind of go back to that question, chapters across the board are now in a mindset of growth. They're not in this survival instinct mindset, and we see more collaborations like Kobe was mentioning with the IFC, with the NPHC, and really branching out and working collaboratively with other councils. So I've seen that growth tremendously since my time here, and it makes me hopeful for the next 5-10 years of what Greek life looks like at this university. My question is, how does a healthy Greek life ecosystem contribute to indirect recruitment or retention methods at this university?
Okay. I think if you're familiar with what move-in looks like in the fall semester on this campus, many of our new students who are moving into the residence halls are met immediately by fraternity and sorority life members that are there to greet their families, help move their things, and, you know, welcome them to the university. They're at orientation events. They're, you know, leaders on this campus. Again, you know, we mentioned U of I earlier. This isn't necessarily a campus where everyone's mother and grandmother and all of their family members have necessarily come here and been Greek. This is really setting the stage and paving the way for yourself. Kobe's here and hoping that his brother comes here and can pave the way for someone else as well and keep giving forward in that way. I think when we think about how do you welcome someone and make an inclusive space, how do you keep them here and retain them so that they're successful, it's you empower them. You have to be, you know, surrounding yourself with people who are like-minded, who share your values. All of our organizations share common values, but they label it something different: brotherhood, sisterhood, mm-hmm. love for one another, care for each other, philanthropy, service, scholarship. All those things can be labeled in different ways, but they all share that same core value. And I think you hit the nail on the head. We're all people. And this is really the experience where you get to learn to work with people and how to treat one another so that when you graduate and when you go into the next phase of your life, you can contribute positively in any community, any environment that you are in, no matter what that looks like for you. So I think that this is key to keeping students successful. It's key to keeping students involved on campus. It's key to being making it feel like this is your home away from home, and this is a place that you share affinity for and that you want to give back to in the future. So hopefully that answers your question.
Any other questions? Yes, Justice Barsamian.
Just a quick comment. Actually, myself and Eric, we talked about this on the way in this morning. You know, there's a bit of a perception issue, I think, within the alumni base relative to Greek life that's not always a positive one. Because I think those that were on our campus 20, 30, 40 years ago, maybe Greek life was not looked at the way it is today. And so I encourage you, I don't have any answers, I just have questions, but I encourage you to, as you think about fundraising for the Greek Life Center and just changing the impression in general with the alumni base of how Greek life is looked at today on our campus as an asset and as a benefit, right, to not only the campus but to the students. You know, to keep that in mind relative to what the campaign's going to be. Because I do believe that there's a bit of a perception issue out there, and it's a negative one with the alumni base. in terms of how we look at Greek life as a university. And, you know, and it's not an accurate perception, as most perceptions aren't, or are, you know, they aren't accurate. So, yeah.
Trustee Butler.
I would just add to sort of put a fine point on that point, a finer point. Well, you were fine. What's interesting here from a persuasion standpoint is that most individuals, even if their chapters are no longer on campus, still have a strong bond with the contemporaries that they enjoyed Greek life with. Mm-hmm. And so that's still solid. What's not solid in some cases is their affinity for the institution, because the institution may have done something that they thought was unjust or didn't support them as much as they could have. So I guess rather than ask you how you handle it, I would ask you to think about sort of everyone involved in this effort to think about how do we connect the affinity that these individuals have for their chapters from when they were members, how do we connect that to the institution now? And I think a lot of it is going to be done by simply the presence of a number of folks who work for the institution to come to the various events and say, we value Greek life now. Just to say that, we value Greek life now. And, you know, to perhaps some will want more of a conversation about that past and about whether the present circumstances are the same or not. But that, I think, is the big challenge here, because we've got thousands of people who think positively about that experience and would have loved to have had a Greek center on campus. Yeah. And would love to have seen the structural changes. I mean, one of the things I liked about the presentation is it wasn't just about the Greek Center. It was also about all the other structural changes system changes and mindset changes that have taken place since 2021. So thank you for that. And let's all hope that we can bring this one home.
Trustee Herrera.
I just want to build off of that, because I was definitely one of those that was very kind of what my, you called it, but like,
don't repeat.
I won't. But I was definitely like an anti-Greek person. You know, that was not. It was not the kind of community that I wanted to be part of. But that was a long time ago, right? It was a very long time ago. I won't even tell you. But the story you just told, like, just flipped my idea and my thought about what Greek life does and how it supports our students. And I would just say that when you're, I think the story that you want to tell, right, you just have to capture it, is like, our stories like Kobe's and other stories of how this is not just about XYZ, which is what we, you know, many of us think of the Greek life to be, but it is about the success outcomes of your students. I mean, that alone, and I think when you start talking about how strong the outcomes are of your students, I think it does start to change the perception of what the Greek community can do for our students. And hopefully what will also happen is you will be able to recruit more, you know, individuals and be part of your community, even just overall to NIU. I think it's a story that definitely needs to be told. I mean, you know, I'm in higher ed myself, and wondering where your brother goes, because I'm in community college space. So
he goes to Kishwaukee right now.
Oh, Kishwaukee, very good.
You don't care.
But
about that.
Oh, of course I do. Are you kidding me? Yeah, I do, because I think it's a great way to get back into, you know, school and transition into NIU, right? So I just hope that you are able to tell your story, not just to your brother, but to other, your friends and everyone who are outside of here. And I mean, this goes to you too. Like, how do you collect these really powerful stories of how the Greek life made NIU smaller, more intimate, and supportive for our students. I just think it's a really powerful story.
Oh, absolutely. I would agree. And I think many of the partnerships and the, you know, colleagues that I've been trying to get to know too, that's what we're talking about, is how do we work with marketing and communications? How do we help the students with social media and telling the story peer to peer, right? Because that goes a long way as well. You have a little bit more weight in that when you are relating to your peers. So I think, you know, there's many avenues, and we're really thinking about how we can do that strategically and thoughtfully.
Thank you.
I think that's it. So I'm going to say thank you for your involvement. Really appreciated the presentation. And it's all about community.
Absolutely.
All right.
Thank you all.
With that, I move to agenda item number 9. Are there any other matters requiring attention of the board today? Before I go to the next thing, I want to say congratulations to the trustees that were reappointed to the board. I would have done that earlier had I been here on time. But I would like to say that the next regularly scheduled meeting of the full Board of Trustees is June 12th, 2025 at 9 a.m. And I will be on time on that day. Let's see, agenda item number 11. The board needs to go into closed session. We do not plan to take up any new business following closed session. May I have a motion to close the public meeting to conduct a closed session to discuss the following subjects authorized by the Illinois Open Meetings Act. Closed session meetings, minutes matters as generally described under Section 2C21 of the Open Meetings Act. Collective bargaining matters as generally described under Section 2C2 of the Open Meetings Act. Litigation and risk management matters as generally described under Sections 2C11, 12 of the Open Meetings Act. Real estate matters as generally described under Section 2C, 5, and 6 of the Open Meetings Act. Student disciplinary cases matters as generally described under Sections 2C, 11, and 12 of the Open Meetings Act. Personnel matters as generally described under Sections 2C, 1, 2, 3, and 21 of the Open Meetings Act. May I have a motion?
So move, Wasowitz.
Second, O'Brien.
Any discussion? Oh, Ms. Stowell, will you please take the roll call vote to close the meeting?
Trustee Rita Athus?
Yes.
Trustee Dennis Barsima?
Yes.
Vice Chair John Butler?
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero?
Yes.
Trustee Aiden O'Brien?
Yes.
Trustee Leland Strom? Trustee Eric Watsowitz?
Yes.
Board Chair Montel Gales?
Yes. The public meeting is now closed.